Hello, hello everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks a lot for listening and downloading. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287, and of course get more episodes and other content at dsmsports.net. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and all the good podcasting apps out there. Really fun episode for you today. Really excited to bring our guest on. I'm going to be talking to Greg Mize, the Director of Digital Marketing for the Atlanta Braves. Really good conversation coming up with Greg, but first we have this episode's helpful tool. This episode's helpful tool is a freemium web-based tool called Cyfe.com, C-Y-F-E.com. And basically, it's one of those tools that it's a really complex dashboard that allows you to bring together all of your data and analytics in one visual format. Facebook, Twitter, and probably what's cool is also Google Analytics. You can manipulate things around. You can bring in any level of granularity and really see a good snapshot of everything you need to see. The premium version allows you to export these visualizations and allows you to create a more PowerPoint deck type thing to show to your superiors, but the free version allows you to have a nice dashboard there for you to access on a daily or a weekly or hourly basis on your desktop as you go throughout the day. It's a great way to get all your data in one place and really look at what you're looking at, whether it's impressions or just overall growth or engagement, and looking at specific things on Google Analytics. So I think you'll have a lot of good use out of it. You'll be able to jump back and forth all day, taking a look at what's happening every week. So give it a shot. Take a look. You might like the free version. You might like the premium version. Or you might just find something you like. So check it out. It is Cyfe.com, C-Y-F-E. And that's this episode's helpful tool. Now we'll be right back to talk to the Director of Digital Marketing for the Atlanta Braves, Greg Mize, coming right at you. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, and now I'm delighted to be joined by someone in the baseball world. It's wintertime, cold out there for everyone who's not in Southern California like me, but baseball season's around the corner. We are joined today by Greg Mize. He's the Director of Digital for the Atlanta Braves. Welcome to the podcast today, Greg.
Thank you, Neil. Great to be here, and in addition to it being warm in Southern California, we are going through a little bit of a warm spell here in Atlanta, so We can rejoice together with this nice warm weather.
Sorry, rest of the country. Well, Greg, really psyched to talk to you today about a little baseball, a little new ballpark, a little bit of everything. But before we get into the meat of the discussion, we like to get to know our guests. So tell our listeners about your career path, how you come up throughout the game, getting to the Braves, and any tips for folks that want to do what you do.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I'll take that second part first. The best tip I can give you is be willing to try new things. Be willing to to be open for internships and really learning as much as you can, making as many good contacts and forming as many good relationships as you can. The sports industry is really such a close-knit community, and you'll be surprised as to how many paths you will cross with the same person or a group of people over time. So definitely that's some of the best advice I can give. As it relates to my career path.
I love that too. It's cliche, but people always say in the sports world it's about who you know, but it's 100% true. I'm definitely all along with that.
And just because you know someone, by no means does that mean you're going to get a job. Right. But for a lot of these positions, especially on the entry level side, they're so competitive. So at least being able to know someone who can provide a reference and say, you got to talk to Neil. He's a fantastic guy. I worked with him at, the Anaheim Ducks, and he's definitely worth an interview. So I think that's definitely some of the benefits that these relationships can give you.
Oh, I love that. Well, let's hear about your path, though, before we get into a whole long tangent.
Yeah, exactly. No, so I've been lucky enough to work in sports my entire career. It was probably around junior year at Fairfield University, where I went to school, that I understood that, wait a second, you can actually have a career in sports. So I did a lot of work, volunteered in our athletic department, worked all of the men's and women's basketball games in the media relations office, helped with statistics and really fulfilling media requests as it relates to media who were covering the team. Mm-hmm. That parlayed into a 10-month internship in the Boston College athletic department after graduation, and that was also in the media relations group. So very similar duties, you know, really helping facilitate the media who were covering the teams. And, you know, that was, it's very interesting, just that specific industry in general, media relations has changed so drastically since when I was a part of it in the early 2000s. And a lot of that has to do with just the evolution of media in general. But that was, again, a fantastic experience. Got a chance to work with the men's hockey team and Coach Jerry York, who is, you know, now the winningest coach in college hockey. And
legend for sure.
For as great of a coach he is, he's an even better person. Runs a fantastic program there, as well as the, you know, the football team, men's basketball team. Worked with some really fantastic people there who helped shape my career. And so when that internship ended, that allowed me to take my first full-time position at NESN, the New England Sports Network, the regional sports network up in New England, rights holder for the Red Sox and the Bruins, and was in their promotions and public relations group. And what was really interesting about that role is part of my duties were helping with the website. And at that point, you know, the web was still very, you know, immature in terms of, you know, what we know of the web today. It really was a place to put the upcoming game schedule and, you know, game recaps, but really sort of basic stuff, but really started, you know, the path of providing an additional outlet, an additional platform for people to learn more about their team and, you know, to follow their favorite teams.
And it was interesting. Pre-social media for everyone listening, I believe, right?
Oh, yes. Pre-social media, yeah. Yes. At the time, their website was run by a website called Boston.com. So Boston.com still exists today. They are the website of the Boston Globe, but they also cover news, entertainment, and heavy sports for the Boston area. And so because of that relationship, a position there opened up. So I moved over and worked at Boston.com for a couple of years. That was my first, you know, digital specific role. And again, at that time, you know, social still wasn't a thing. Online video was becoming a thing, but the experience wasn't good because a lot of people are still on dial up.
Right.
But
buffering all day.
Oh yeah, a lot of buffering. So that was a really good digital specific role. And it was around that time, you know, that I'd, you know, grown up in Boston, went to school in Connecticut, and was really looking for a little bit of a change of scenery. And my wife and I, who had been married for about a year at the time, just said, hey, you know what, let's find something down south. You know, worst that happens is we don't like it, and we move back to Boston. And I was lucky enough to get an interview with a group inside of Turner Broadcasting called Play On Sports. And they were doing webcast of non-televised sporting events. So a lot of colleges, minor leagues, amateur sports. Their flagship rights holder was the ACC. So through, you know, previous connections at Boston College, like we kind of talked about earlier, I was able to, you know, to get an interview down there, and a phone interview led to, you know, a day long of in-person interviews. And next thing you know, we're moving down to Atlanta. And, so, you know, that was, you know, my first, you know, entry into Turner Sports. After being at Play On for about a year, Turner actually sold those rights. So I moved over, and from there, for the next 5 or so years, worked on pretty much every sports property that Turner owned at the time. So everything from NASCAR, which at that time was all of NASCAR's digital rights, and 6 races on TNT. I was there when they acquired the rights to March Madness Live and in March Madness on TBS, TNT, and True TV. And then MLB postseason, which was extremely exciting. And then most recently, before coming over to the Braves, I spent a little over a year on all of their NBA properties. So NBA Digital, NBA TV, NBA on TNT, League Pass, the Game Time app. And I honestly really, you know, saw myself being at Turner for as long as my career would take me. And the opportunity at the Braves opened up. You know, they had just announced the move to the new ballpark, and it was a fantastic opportunity to go in and you really build a digital team at the Braves. And, you know, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that I just could not pass up. So I took that position, started the day before the home opener in 2014, and have been there ever since.
So were the Braves a pretty, I mean, obviously I'm sure a lot has changed and evolved since your time has been there, but were the Braves a digitally mature organization at that point? Social media was pretty much already penetrated. The website was pretty much already running itself. I mean, what were you able to come in there and say, okay, let's improve in X, Y, and Z right away, or is it not quite like that?
Yeah, I mean, they were active on, I think at that time it was Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So Snapchat hadn't become a thing yet. You know, all 30 baseball clubs are really lucky to work with Major League Baseball Advanced Media. Mm-hmm. So from a web standpoint, from an app standpoint, from a streaming standpoint, BAM does a fantastic job with that. So that was obviously all in a good place. There was obvious, you know, some great opportunity to do a lot more with social as it relates to, you know, more content, more ways to engage and connect with fans, more ways to showcase our players. And what's just been exciting is, you know, more and more platforms come to fruition, whether it's new platforms like Snapchat or evolution to platforms like Instagram Stories and Facebook Live and Periscope. You know, the introduction of these new platforms has really just given us more and more opportunities to showcase the players and to connect with the fans. And that's been one of the most exciting parts of what we do. And I think to coincide with that, over the last year, we've really tried to push the concept of digital innovation as it relates to the fan and their experience, you know, especially the experience of coming to a game. And so what we're really excited about is what that means for SunTrust Park once we open the gates in April of this year. But, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to do is it's interesting. We at the Braves know baseball really well, right? And all baseball teams know baseball. That's their bread and butter. Mm-hmm. But especially as it relates to innovation and new platforms, you know, what we really want to do is align ourselves with, and we're so lucky in Atlanta that we have a really fantastic and growing tech community and so many startups. And so we went out and we formed relationships with the Atlanta Tech Village and Georgia Tech, and we had a lasting relationship with Experience and have done more with them. So it's really trying to balance, okay, what we know our fans, but then also let's kind of stretch a little bit and try to find inspiration elsewhere.
So would you say your role there really is, I guess, both sides of the coin, where you're looking at the fan engagement side on digital and social platforms? So the fans that obviously when they're sitting at home or sitting in class or wherever they are on their commute, and then also just as much effort and thought going into the fan experience at the ballpark and, you know, everything from parking to egress and ingress and all that and ticketing and all that. Is it both sides of the coin? You really have to worry about engagement as well as, I guess, fan experience?
100%. You know, obviously for fans that live, you know, in the area, or even family, we're blessed that we have such a large footprint. You know, we touch, you know, you got obviously Georgia, but then you've got South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi. You know, we have such a large footprint that we have so many fans that actually come from out of town, especially during the summer, whether they're coming in for a weekend and it's their one trip to see the Braves during the year. And so obviously we want to be relevant to them. And we also want to be relevant to the fan that lives in San Diego or Seattle. You know, because just because you don't live near SunTrust Park and you don't come to 10 games a year, you know, we should still, you know, be as cognizant and relevant to you as possible, because the way we look at it, a fan is a fan, you know, whether they're coming to a lot of games because they live close, or, you know, they're following on social and all these digital platforms and they're watching games on TV. We want to be as relevant to our fans as possible, no matter where they are. So definitely to answer your question, it's a heavy focus on both of those elements.
So I kind of want to take a quick step back to when you first did start out with the team and coming from a career that was primarily media, Turner and Nesson and everything before that. And then all of a sudden now maybe your goals was driving tune in, driving site traffic, driving engagement on social, even as you got a more evolved. And then all of a sudden now you have tickets to sell, and it's an entirely new thing, I imagine. I mean, for those of us that came up in the team side, it's always been a part of the role, but how much of that was really a big learning curve for you and started to, you really had to pay attention to, yeah, we're driving all this engagement, but how can we actually show that we're contributing to the bottom line?
Definitely. So that was definitely a challenge, and the challenge wasn't so much understanding the importance of it, because, I mean, you know, ticket revenues are bread and butter. You know, that is the one piece of revenue that we have the greatest influence over. But what it really was really educating and showcasing that, you know, how you treat ticket sales on digital and specifically social is so much more than just putting out links and, you know, click here to buy. Because that is not how people transact. And that is becoming even more and more the case. You know, we see, you know, less direct sales from people directly clicking on a link on Facebook or Twitter, but we see greater sales when we're able to use those platforms to educate people and to get them excited about things that are happening at the ballpark. And people know how to buy tickets, you know, so people know that, okay, they've decided they want to go to a Braves game. They know how to get to whether it's Braves.com or Ticketmaster, or even just simply going to Google and searching for tickets, going into the app. So it was really kind of taking away from that heavy direct response push and more toward building engagement and building fandom and creating awareness as to all the exciting things that we have going on at the ballpark. And, you know, that's really paid off. One of the things that we've done over the last, I'd say, 6 or so months is put a heavy focus into the monetary yield of social media. And what we mean by that is we've been really looking at associating social interaction within CRM. And what we're able to see is that fans who are engaging with us on social media are spending 6 times more than fans that aren't. So what that tells me is that, you know, let's not focus on click here to buy, because that is not how people transact. But if you can create this ecosystem in this environment where people are engaged and they feel bought into the team and they feel a part of it, they're more likely to buy tickets, and it's proven that they're doing so, and they're spending 6 times more. So that was really a big part of the education that I wanted to provide was, you know, let's focus more on engagement. Let's focus on building fandom, and the ticket element will come. You know, that's more of a long tail approach, but it'll come.
And they're also the ones who are out there evangelizing for you as well, whether they're posting something on Facebook or even just wearing a Braves jersey around or telling their friends, hey, we should go to a Braves game this weekend. So you can't really put a price on that either. If I may, how does that science actually work? I mean, you don't need to go in too much in depth, but is it a really good platform you guys have? Software that you guys use that allows you to track all this down at the CRM level?
Yeah. So you know, from a CRM standpoint, we use Microsoft Dynamics, and you know, we've got a fantastic analyst who actually just brought on another analyst that is really focusing on just business analytics. Obviously, on the baseball operation side, you know, we've got fantastic analytics capabilities, and now we're starting to apply that to the business side as well. And in the very simplest form, it's really attributing social media engagement. So we're looking specifically at Twitter. It's a little bit easier to get access to those APIs, but we're also, you know, starting to tap into Facebook as well. And really, it's just kind of looking at, okay, here are the people that are engaging, and here are the people that aren't. And, you know, by just pulling some sampling, able to see that those engagers are spending 6 times more.
Yeah. Are you finding that it's not as difficult a path to be able to connect the social media user with the ticket buyer, or is it kind of require them to have a uniform email or phone number with those profiles?
Yeah, here's the deal. I mean, it is definitely not an exact science. It's definitely not black and white. So, yeah, I mean, definitely when you have different emails associated with different accounts, that makes it a little bit more challenging. You know, I think what we try to do is look to associate, you know, the Twitter handle with the email, and then, you know, associating it with that CRM record. And again, there are ones that we're missing, no doubt, because the emails don't match. But I think it's a really good directional metric that underscores the value and really the monetization power of social media.
Very cool, for sure. And how does it tend to how is social media also penetrating the other parts of the organization? And is it just as meaningful in CR, in sponsorship, in fan development? Have you gotten a nice hold there where everyone understands the power of these platforms, whether it's digital or social, and how to go about communicating with you to make sure that you're augmenting their messaging?
100%. I think we are probably one of the most cross-functional departments inside the front office, because every department has their own objectives. And really, there's relevance for social media on all those objectives. And it's really working with them and understanding what their goals are, what their priorities are, and then going back and figuring out, okay, how does this translate into social media? How can we bring this to life? How can we communicate this? And by, you know, by any measure, it's very important to be very collaborative with every organization within the front office.
Is it almost a balance too, where you want folks to understand how powerful the platforms can be and to make sure that they are knocking on your door, giving you a call when they have stuff that they think is good fodder for digital or social, and at the same time not getting to the point where every little thing needs to have a website story or a tweet or a Facebook post, to kind of find that balance where, yes, we want to support you, but not every single thing you do is worthy of a post, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the way that we've treated that is previously it was, you know, we need a tweet or we need this web page, and instead of positioning it as that approach, it's been more, okay, you know, we are trying to sell commemorative bricks for SunTrust Park. How can you bring that to life digitally? And so instead of just saying, hey, we need a tweet, it's just, hey, here's something that is an important priority for us. Mm. And then we take it back and we figure out the best way to communicate it. That specific example, you know, we were able to do a really cool content piece that was highly visual and you know, kind of was this transformation of all these individual bricks that morphed into our Script A logo, and then being able to pay that off with the call to action that, you know, commemorative bricks are now available. So there's definitely ways that we can communicate those messages beyond just we need a tweet, a web page, a post. So we're really kind of focused more on what are your goals, what are your objectives, and then, okay, let's take a step back and figure out the best way to bring these to life. And that's just not the digital team. That's how, you know, we work collaboratively with the marketing team as well. And so it's really become a good relationship. And, you know, we have very frequent weekly check-ins with many of our departments in the front office. We meet many times during the week with ticket sales, with marketing, with our content team, to really kind of make sure that all these objectives are on the front burner and really collaborating and brainstorming the best ways to bring them to life.
I love that so much, that objective-based approach. Focusing on the why more than the what, and the what coming after, sort of coming after the fact, and letting you, I guess, optimize each platform appropriately for that objective.
Love that. No doubt.
Is that also come into play for any corporate partnership activation? Or is it now evolved to the point, I hope so, where it's not just we owe X partner Chick-fil-A needs 8 Facebook posts this month? Is it now where, you know, are you taking a bigger role in how you're activating partners on those platforms, digital and social?
Yeah, and the great thing about our corporate partnerships team is they come to us on the front end. So they come to us and say, hey, you know, we're going to pitch, you know, potential sponsor XYZ, or we're renewing with, you know, sponsor ABC. You know, what are some ideas that you know, are digital in nature and can help extend and activate what their goals are? And so, you know, we're able then to go back to the playbook and figure out what makes sense to do in app, what makes sense to do on social, what makes sense to do online. So yeah, they're fantastic of coming up to us on the front end, as opposed to just, you know, giving us a signed PO and saying, hey, we need to do 12 tweets for this sponsor, right, you know, over the next week. and it goes both ways. And, you know, what we're also doing now is we sit in the corporate partnerships weekly meeting, both us digital and the marketing teams, and we present to them, hey, here's some upcoming initiatives that we're doing. Here's a content piece that's going to live on social. Here's our 2017 marketing campaign, and kind of making that a two-way street so they can see it and say, hey, this is perfect for this sponsor that we're talking to in 2 weeks. So it's definitely a two-way street, and I think has led to some pretty cool integrations.
I got to tell you, man, I'm sitting here, my head's almost exploding with thinking about all the platforms that you do manage, with the app, with the website, with all the social platforms, microsites, in-game stuff. And do you have any tricks or tools that you try to, that you help keep track of all these things that you have going on and over the course of 160 plus games a season and 80 plus at home?
So Bo Schembechler, the legendary Michigan coach, the quote, the team. I mean, that's the secret sauce. We've got a fantastic digital team that, you know, is publishing content, is looking at the analytics, is strategizing. You know, that is by far how we're keeping up with everything. both, you know, platforms that are at our disposal, new platforms that come to fruition. You know, Instagram a couple weeks ago launched live capabilities. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that helps us kind of stay on track and really understand everything we have at our disposal. And one of the things that we really want to do a good job of next year is really starting to get, you know, differentiating the types of content that are on the different types of platforms. So, you know, and we definitely try to do that, and I think we want to do more of that. So, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all, 30-second, you know, video piece that hits all of our platforms. You know, it's let's figure out what makes the most sense for Instagram, what makes the most sense for Facebook, for Twitter. And then also, too, working with our production team to make sure it's shot in the right way. You know, a piece of content on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and something that we want to do on Snapchat, I mean, they should look and function extremely different. So really kind of keeping in mind what makes the most sense for Facebook doesn't necessarily make sense for Twitter. So really being diligent on looking at customized content for all those platforms. And that's something that we'll be working very hard on next year.
Let alone, I guess, trying to plan for a season a few months from now when who knows where other new platform features will come out there or more hardware that Snapchat will release or something like that.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. And you know, when I started in 14, like I said, at that time it was Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And what was interesting about that is the process of capturing and disseminating content on those platforms, especially as it relates to a game, right, where we've got access and we're on the field during BP and we're getting stuff during the game, it was pretty simple because you could just really rely on one or two core people to gather the content and then really publish it on all these three main platforms. Mm-hmm. And what's happened now is I think the biggest evolution has been the introduction of Live. So whether it's Facebook Live or Periscope and now Instagram, you know, if you're using your phone to, you know, to Facebook Live batting practice, that's all that phone is doing, right? So you also can't use that to get a couple of photos that you can hit on Twitter and then a couple other photos you can use for Instagram. And so it's really lent itself to having a strong team and really, you know, understanding people's roles that, okay, you're focused on Snapchat. Your focus on Live, your focus on, and now we're going to have multiple people focused on Live because there's now three platforms for that. You know, you're focused on gathering content to be published on Twitter. And so it really makes the on-site collection of content definitely more of a challenge, but it provides so many more opportunities and ways for fans to engage.
Do you think as far as the game day staff in particular, is it going to be more towards specialization where this person is going to own Snapchat, this person is going to own Facebook and Facebook Live, or are you more so to use a baseball analogy, going for five tool players?
So it's a little bit of both. You know, I think specialization is important because you know, for the individual running it, it's a sense of pride and a sense of ownership. Mm-hmm. And again, all these platforms really function so differently. So we definitely have owners for each platform, and some people have more than one platform that they're responsible for. Mm-hmm. But by no means does that mean that you're the only one publishing on that platform, right? So you're helping with direction and leading, whether it's the voice, the type of content, but also the five-tool player aspect comes in key because we want people who are well-rounded and understand all these platforms at our disposal. Mm-hmm. Both for their personal and professional development, but also too, you know, someone's sick one game and they can't come, right? I mean, we're not going to make you come and work a game, you know, if you're under the weather. So, okay, let's have someone step up and now you're going to be taking Snapchat tonight. So it's definitely a mixture of both, because, you know, definitely we feel to get the best content, we want to have as many different options as possible.
No, that certainly makes sense. And as you sitting up, I guess, more leading the strategy and supervising to some degree, probably getting your hands dirty a little bit, how much does the strategy and the type of content and the cadence and the voice and all that come into play when you do have a team that is winning some days, losing some days, and, you know, obviously going to the last season, the team was out of the playoff race later in the season. This season you guys are hoping to be in the playoff hunt all season long. How much are you guys cognizant of we need to overhaul this or we need to change this, and how do those conversations take place at the executive level?
Yeah, we're very cognizant. you know, so much of what we do is understanding our fans and what they want. And, you know, you have to know that if you're mired in a significant losing streak, you know, you got to dial it back a little bit. When things are going well, you got to turn it up a little bit. It was interesting when John Hart took over as the president of baseball operations. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the philosophies that he brought into play is obviously the Braves have a very long history of successful scouting. Mm-hmm. And that was the hallmark of our 14 consecutive division titles, and really just always having the minor league system stocked and guys moving up and you know, ready to jump into the major league level, and that was a tribute to just fantastic scouting. And what Coppy's brought to the mix is, you know, a really strong analytics approach as well. And there's definitely space for both of them, and you know, the way that they kind of, you know, painted the picture when they took over in 14 was, we're 51% scouting, 49% analytics. So we want to have a very healthy balance between scouting capabilities and analytics capabilities. And if we're deadlocked, that 1% is going to lean into the favor of what the gut is, what the scout says. And we employ that exact same approach on social, right? So, you know, we have to have a healthy mix of understanding the content that our fans want, what their appetite is, what they are wanting to engage with, the type of stuff that they want to see. But then also basing that on the analytics, what's working, what are people engaging with? And in knowing that, you know, when to turn it up, when to turn it down is very important. So we use both kind of our gut, but also what the numbers are telling us to kind of understand what we do when we do it.
How important is it for you guys to have at least something of a line of communication with the baseball ops team, so that if you guys are being told that before Freddie Freeman, your guys' star player signed his long-term contract, you know, it's okay to parade Freddie Freeman as the future of this team and the leader of this team, or should we not go that direction because you never know, there, you know, it's an active trade market? Are those concerns that keep you up at night? If so, how do you go about having those communication lines open?
Yeah, we definitely have great lines of communication with Coppy. I mean, heck, he is our most prolific tweeter with his Ask Coppy sessions that he's done 5 or 6 times this year. So it's great because he understands the power and the value of social media. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're communicating on a need-to-know basis, right? Mm-hmm. So, right. You know, we're not in the war room, and we're not seeing everything that's up there. But, you know, we'll get a heads up when something's happening, you know, whether it's someone that we're acquiring. You know, most recently when we announced the extension for Ender Inciarte, who is a star both on and off the field. We were able to get a heads up on that so we could prep content, you know, whether it was some of the off-season signings that we made this year, R.A. Dickey and Bartolo Colon, and then, you know, some of the trades that we've made over the previous years. So we'll get a heads up so we can help prep it, so we can make sure we're covered from a social and digital space, but we're definitely not, you know, in constant contact with everything that they have potentially going. But once something is inked or about to be inked, we'll get a heads up so we can start prepping accordingly.
So you hear that, everyone out there in Twitter Nation, as much as you think it's going to help, do not send trade requests and player signing requests to the Braves Twitter feed.
we've seen some good ones over the years.
And obviously, I mean, having John Coppola, having Coppy there as your GM, having him be so open to social, certainly, I mean, I see Ask Coppy all the time now, and it's really cool when he does those sessions that just seem like they go on for marathon sessions, which is, it astounds me that he takes time to do that. It's obviously not the norm, I wouldn't think, in MLB. Do you have other clubs that are almost jealous of you, and do you ever have to, I mean, does your PR team kind of sit on thin ice or on pins and needles when he's doing that?
You know, it's interesting. So we've done, you know, these chats with players and alumni, you know, since I've been here. And the way that it's worked is, you know, a lot of times it's us on the keyboard, and we're sitting next to the individual and, you know, they're picking questions and they're answering them and we're transcribing them for them and, you know, cutting them down to 140 characters. And so the first Ask Coppy that we did, we just kind of assumed that, okay, this is the way that we'll treat this. And he sat right down and he goes, no, I'll do it. So, That's literally him on the keyboard, going through questions and just ripping off answers left and right. And yeah, to I don't know how other teams handle these, because you know a lot of other teams will do these executive Q&A sessions, but I would venture to say that ours are the most unique and definitely give the most real perspective, and definitely not afraid. You know, he's not afraid to shy away from criticism. You know, it was interesting. The first ever Ask Copy that we did, it was during the off season last year. And the first question was, why should I even, you know, bother coming to a game this year? And he took it and answered it. And, you know, typically those are the things that people may shy away from.
Right.
You know, of note, I believe, and I can't confirm this, but I'm pretty confident in saying that he is the first professional GM to answer a Twitter question directed at him that had a poop emoji in it. So, so we've got that. So, but no, he understands, and it's authentic and it's real, and that's why it works. You know, because it's him and he's being honest. And I think that's really what we owe our fans, right? We owe transparency, and not to say that we're going to, you know, open the playbook and let them know, you know, everything that's happening,
right?
Because you got to keep stuff close to the vest, obviously, but you know, directionally, we want to be able to communicate and help them understand what's happening. And we think that helps build fandom, and it'll make our future success that much more enjoyable, both for us and for our fans.
Does MLB at a league level, or even BAM at that level, do they almost, I guess, try to nudge you guys in that direction to have as much execs on social as possible, as much player interaction as possible? Is it more just, you know, we'll let teams do things the way they do it, and we'll empower them as much as we can? Or is there a little bit of both, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a... I mean, they obviously are supportive of us and any team, you know, doing stuff with executives and with players. Because it's just, it's a good, you know, fan experience. By no means do they force any of that on any of the teams.
Right.
But they also do a good job of sharing, you know, hey, you know... this team, you know, just executed this with a player or a GM or an executive, and here's you know how it was operationalized, and here's what the success metrics were. So they're definitely very you know, very open and want teams to be active, but it's not in a way that, you know, is going to push a team to do something that they're uncomfortable with.
No, that's definitely important. Is there like a weekly or monthly email that goes out, or is there a call with all the teams at the league level?
There is. There's a couple of weekly emails that go out. There's one specifically for social. There's one specifically for digital ticket sales.
Wow.
And there are, you know, calls that happen throughout the season with all clubs. Again, as it relates to social, as it relates to ticket sales. There is an off-season summit, an off-season two-day summit that happens with all the teams to focus on digital advertising and social media. So, you know, the league and BAM really do a good job of kind of fostering that communication, you know, because obviously we're competitive on the field, but, you know, if the Astros did something that we thought was interesting that we could apply and do, you know, for us here in Atlanta, you know, we're going to do that. And vice versa, you know, if any team sees something that we do and wants to gain inspiration from it, you know, by all means, you know, we're happy to share what we learned. So there is definitely this culture of collaboration that happens, which I don't know how it works in other leagues, but I think it's really unique and a good experience.
That's tremendous. Greg, I can pick your brain all day, man. Talking to Greg Mize, Director of Digital for the Atlanta Braves. I guess before we get to steps of those charitable stat, I do have to ask you this, because I enjoyed following myself as a fan. You guys did a great job sort of closing out the old ballpark this past season, did a lot of looking back on some of those powerhouse teams of the late 90s and early 2000s, Chipper Jones and all those guys, and Andrew Jones. So I guess what was your biggest takeaway? What was the best memory? What was the best content that you kind of took away from these past, I guess, 6 to 8 months when you guys got to do all that?
Man, it was so much fun. You know, really our approach was capture anything and everything that we can as it related to that final game, because you know the roster of alumni that we had coming back, you know, that obviously you just mentioned, and you know the big three, and then having Hank Aaron, you know, come out and throw the final pitch, and it was just, you know, it was really nostalgic and really just a great celebration of the Braves here in Atlanta. And really our approach was to just capture as much of it and get out as much as we could, you know, for people who were there, but also, you know, really to provide a perspective for people who weren't there. You know, in the lead up, you know, all throughout the season, you know, we really wanted to get fans involved. So, you know, we were encouraging them to share their Turner Field memories. Mm-hmm. You know, we were collecting all those submissions on social and aggregating it and allowing people to kind of, you know, scroll through and see what other people's, you know, memories were of Turner Field. You know, we got celebrities involved. You know, each game we had a countdown where we would tear down the number of home games remaining. And that was just so much fun, you know, whether it was, you know, notables, whether it was, you know, musicians, actors, local athletes, and then just general fans. And that was really the fun part, is when we got fans involved. So it was a great celebration of Turner Field, a great celebration of the Braves in general. And I think we learned a lot because, you know, we're going to want to do a lot of this next year as well from SunTrust Park. You know, opening day and opening weekend, there's going to be so much content for us to capture and share. We're really excited to be able to do that.
So cool. And I can't wait to have you back on the podcast to talk about SunTrust Park when it opens up next spring. And just so exciting talking to you offline and online about it. But we're going to have a little more fun with you coming up in our The Chop segment. So start your But first, we have this episode's shareable stat, and we will be right back with that.
Fun stuff with Greg Mize, Director of Digital Marketing for the Atlanta Braves. Really enjoy talking to him. Lots of good insight there. And the Braves just do a really good job all around, and you can tell why. We're going to have a little more fun with Greg, though, and get to know him a little more in our upcoming segment, The Chop. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat is all about Instagram stories. A recent stat came out that Instagram stories has over 150 million daily active users. That's 150 million people accessing Instagram stories every single day. So what does that mean? What can you take away from it? Well, first and foremost, it means if you're not utilizing Instagram stories on a fairly consistent basis, you're missing out. There's still a little bit of competition, of course, for attention with the way Instagram stories has its discoverability at the top of the feed. But it means that if you are producing good stuff for Instagram stories, there is a receptive audience waiting there to see it. So you should certainly jump on now and also take a look at the new tools that Instagram is bringing to its stories, whether that means stickers or swiping up to see more with a link. Of course, we heard that ads are coming to Instagram stories, so we'll see how that affects those numbers and that engagement time. Analytics, of course, will continue to grow, and there's been a recent introduction of better analytics for Instagram stories. So all in all, 150 million daily active users, better analytics coming, cool new features out there. No doubt that Instagram stories should become a part of your arsenal, and start playing around with it today. The difference between Instagram stories and Snapchat, first and foremost, of course, is you're able to upload content as long as it's produced in the last 24 hours on your camera roll, as opposed to Snapchat's memories feature. So you're seeing a lot of good polished graphics, you're seeing some cool video content, some good narratives, as well as just some of the raw content that got Snapchat its popularity early on, but now you're able to expose it to the 150 million daily active users for Instagram stories. All right, that's this episode's shareable stat. Hope it means something to you. Hope you take something out of it and you act upon it. We will be right back to have some more fun with Greg in our segment that I have called The Chop.
All right, that was this episode's shareable stat. And now we are right back with Greg Mize, the director of visual for the Atlanta Braves. Greg, had a lot of fun with you in your interview. You hit a home run. Are you now ready to do The Chop?
Let's do it. I love the name, by the way.
Thank you for that. I take a lot of pride in my naming segments. Number one for you, Greg. Tell me your favorite campaign or piece of content from your time working for Turner Sports, specifically in NASCAR.
You know what? We did a companion stream. It was a mosaic of streams called Race Buddy. And what Race Buddy was, it was available both on NASCAR.com as well as in the app as well. And it was a four-stream mosaic that allowed fans to kind of customize different views from their favorite drivers. So, you know, you could get within, Dale Jr.'s in-car camera. Or you could get a high camera where you could see the entire track and the action happening on it. And, you know, NASCAR races are I'm sure, you know, very difficult to produce from a TV perspective because there's so much action happening. And there's 43 drivers, and every fan has a driver that's who they care about. That's all they want to see. So Race Buddy was a great tool to augment that and, you know, allow this sort of companion viewing experience that gave fans some customization in allowing them to kind of watch the race that they wanted to watch it. So I would definitely say Race Buddy. I remember Race Buddy started the year before I started working at Turner Sports, and it was a really fun platform to work on.
Yeah, it sounds almost ahead of its time. That's really cool. And I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to next NASCAR season in a few months here, a couple months here. I want to see spectacles on someone in the pit crew. I think that's going to be some money content.
Yes, or maybe spectacles on a Braves player during batting practice, right?
Ooh, geez, that's going to be really cool. Oh, gosh. I can't wait for spring training now. I want to see that. All right, number two for you, Greg. Tell me, what is your favorite social media and sports guiding principle or core belief or mantra, whatever you want to put it, and why?
We talked about it earlier, I'm going to say that the 51-49 split, right? So 51% gut, knowing your fans, knowing your team, knowing your players, you know, who we want to showcase, where the fan appetite is, and then combining that with analytics, what's working from an engagement standpoint, what's working from a monetization standpoint, and really kind of the sweet spot is to where those two things come together, I think can help you really get to the best and most effective content.
I really do love that. Numbers can tell you a lot, but so can just being that person that is in front of these platforms all day, that's seeing all the mentions and seeing what people are actually saying and reacting to. There's definitely a good mix of gut and numbers that have to guide it all at the end of the day.
Definitely.
All right, number three for you, Greg. I always like this question. Tell me the best quote and or personality on the Braves team.
So, best quote was probably John Coppola during Ask Coppy, where he extended his condolences to Harambe. So that one always makes us smile. I think from a personality standpoint, we're lucky, especially for a lot of our younger guys, that they have such unique personalities, right? So you have Ender Inciarte, Gold Glove winner. He is so humble, and he's very active on social, whether it's talking to fans or even just you go through and look through his likes, and he's just liking, tweets from different fans that are saying stuff about him. So, he is such a humble and down-to-earth guy and as great off the field as he is on the field. Dansby Swanson, really just grounded, very humble. My favorite Dansby Swanson moment from last year was we did selfies on the field for one of the final games at Turner Field. So we allowed fans to come on the field, and they really just kind of lined all around the warning track. And our players came out in shifts and just walked, fan by fan by fan, and allowed them to take selfies with them. And there was this one fan for Dansby that held this sign that said he was his high school gym teacher. Elementary school gym teacher. And Dansby was kind of, going person to person to person, and stopped and looked at the sign and read the sign and had this smile that came on his face and looked at his teacher and just went out and gave her a big embrace. And, he is a guy that, will never forget, his roots and where he came from. And we're so lucky he, grew up right down the street, in Marietta from SunTrust Park. So he's a fantastic personality. Malik Smith is one of the funniest guys that you'll ever meet. Extremely outgoing. So again, I couldn't pick just one. Even though I mentioned those, there's definitely more. But it's a very unique mix of different types of personalities, which keeps things exciting.
Definitely good to have a younger team that gets the fact that fans enjoy seeing those personalities. It sounds like a lot of fun there in that clubhouse.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is the younger players, they grew up on social media. Like, that's how they communicated, right? So there isn't really this learning curve as to, what are these platforms. They know what they are because they're on them and they've been on them. So, and they've probably used them to follow, players when they were in high school. Oh. So it's interesting because there's a high degree of understanding of both the platforms in general, but also the power of these platforms.
That's a good point. On number four for you, Greg, tell me the social media platform that the Braves have the most consistent success on and why you think that is.
You know, I think Twitter, and I'd say that probably because it's the most visible. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think too, we're between Twitter and Facebook, we're able to get a really robust set of analytics as to what's working. But you know, we're really proud of a lot of the stuff that we've been doing on Twitter. You know, even most recently, you know, we've been doing these GIFs where when we acquire a player, you know, through a trade or free agent signing, you know, we kind of have a it's an animated GIF of them in their old uniform, and then you know, a Braves jersey and Braves cap, you know, come on the screen, and there they are in their Braves gear. And you know, I think especially for the Bartolo Colon signing, that one just got so much engagement, and it's a really fun way to connect with fans. So I'm proud of the work that our team's done on all of our platforms. But mm-hmm. you know, to answer the question, I'd probably say Twitter, just because it's probably the most visible of all the platforms that we're on.
All right, number five for you. We alluded to this a little bit earlier. Tell me the most memorable trade you've been a part of for the Braves, and how that went down from a digital perspective.
I've got two, both on very different sides of the coin. So the first one was after the 2014 season, which was the Jason Hayward trade. And, you know, that was the start of our rebuild. And, you know, that was one of those trades where you pull the trigger, you put it out there on social media, and you just tiptoe back, and you just, you know, you just let it out there. I think in time, you know, fans have come to appreciate that trade, you know, especially, you know, being able to see, you know, what that trade's led to, you know, acquiring, you know, that trade was Shelby Miller and Tyrell Jenkins, and then we were able to turn Shelby Miller into Dansby Swanson, Ender and CRT, and Aaron Blair. So that trade has, I would say, worked out well for us. And so I think that segues into my second answer, was the Ender, Dansby, and Aaron Blair trade. I think that was the first trade where fans understood what was happening, and all the deals that we made, you know, the previous year, and really stockpiling the system. But I think that was kind of the, when everyone's like, okay, wait a second, we just got the number one draft pick from last year that happens to, you know, grow up down the street and, you know, played college ball in Vanderbilt. And, you know, we've got this fantastic center fielder that has developed into a, you know, gold glove center fielder this year, and a really promising pitching prospect. So, I would say those two for very different reasons. But I think those are the two that stand out as the most memorable for me.
Oh, very cool. Very educational as well, going through those from the digital side, social side. All right, tell me, you've been around up in Boston, you've been in Atlanta, you may have traveled a bit with the team. Tell me your favorite non-Atlanta MLB ballpark you've been to and why.
You know, Fenway and Wrigley stand out just because of their historical significance. You know, even the old Yankee Stadium, just because, I mean, you walked in there and, you know, just years on years on years of history, you know, that has lived in those cathedrals. I also love Target Field, you know, where the Twins play. You know, that was also designed by Populous, who was the architect on SunTrust Park. Mm-hmm. And you know, has a very modern feel, but is also very classic in nature. And that's what we're striving for with SunTrust Park. So, again, I'm going to cop out and not give you one answer. I'm going to give you a bunch.
No, I like that. I've been to a lot of ballparks myself, and I always have felt like that when I walked into Wrigley, there was just a special aura about it, and you can't really explain it, but it just felt that way. And
it feels different, yeah. Yep, no doubt.
All right, number seven for you, Greg. Tell me the Major League Baseball player that's not on the Braves that does the best job on social media and why.
I enjoy Chris Archer from the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, he's very real on social, right? I mean, I think he truly captures the essence of you know, what the true power of social media is for athletes, and it humanizes them. right? It just it makes them a person. It takes them from this all-star caliber player to someone that someone can recognize and relate to. So yeah, and I think, you know, he's very inspirational on the platforms, but he's very real. I saw, don't quote me on the exact tweet, but he had a tweet from a couple days ago where he was talking about his mom has a bunch of Christmas ornaments of major league players and made a comment about how four of them have hit home runs off of him. So again, he's real, he's authentic. And you can really kind of see that personality that you see in the dugout and during interviews really translate to social as well.
I like that. I'll tell you my honorable mention, even though he's not in baseball anymore, is Dan Heron. That guy.
Yes.
You want to laugh? Just follow Dan Heron. You're guaranteed a couple laughs every day for sure.
No doubt. And I think I saw somewhere that he's now in the Diamondback system potentially. I think he's an instructor with the Diamondbacks.
Yeah,
doing something for them. Right. So, yeah, so he's still involved somewhere. Hopefully, his Twitter account doesn't change.
All right, number 8 for you, Greg. These ones are always fun. Tell me the best food to get in Atlanta, and also the food you're most excited about to try in the new ballpark next year.
Well, no doubt, you know, we've got some fantastic barbecue here in Atlanta, Fox Brothers Barbecue, which is actually going to be opening a. They're going to have a restaurant in collaboration with Terrapin Brewery, which is a fantastic brewer out of Athens. So they're going to have a location at SunTrust Park in the Battery. So, I mean, I'm a little concerned about what's going to happen to my weight next year once we move with all the food options we have. So Fox Brothers is definitely for barbecue. Antico. So Atlanta's really not known for pizza, but Antico Pizza is probably some of the best pizza I've ever had. We're going to have them in the Battery as well. So, Antico and Fox Brothers definitely stand out. Bad. And again, next year, starting in April, you can get them in conjunction with the Braves game. So, so that'll be a lot of fun.
Not bad at all. All right, to close out, Greg, tell me the Braves player whose name we're all going to know by this time next year that we may not know that well right now.
Man, let's see. So can we count Dansby? Do people know Dansby? I think people know Dansby. Number one draft pick.
I know him, but maybe the mainstream doesn't yet. The people on ESPN, maybe not yet. But that could be a good one for sure.
They will. I mean, he hit 301, 302 this year after being called up. Played fantastic short. So if you don't know Dansby, first of all, you should. And second of all, you definitely will next year.
Definitely a very talented guy. And definitely when you think about building for the future, he's part of that core for sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, I had a lot of fun doing the chop with you. The first and only time I've ever enjoyed the chop. Now it's your chance to take over the podcast a little bit. Tell us your social media all-star to follow. Who they? Someone on Twitter, who they are and why they're worth following.
It's got to be Neil Horowitz, right?
Oh, obviously.
in addition to you, the guys at Sport Techie do a fantastic job. You know, obviously the heavy Twitter presence, but their blog is fantastic and good for them. They now have a content partnership with Sports Illustrated. But you know, they're covering just the convergence of sports and technology and not just on a national level, on an international level. It's a great place for inspiration to see what's happening, to see what people are doing. And they're really great people too. So I would definitely give Sport Techie a recommendation. I assume most of, if not all of your listeners are already following them, but if they're not, definitely give them a follow and check out their blog.
Highly recommend that, Sport Techie. I'm probably on their site and reading at least 2 or 3 or 4 stories every single day. So
yep.
I would definitely second that one. How about yourself? Where can we find you as well as all things Braves on digital and social?
Yeah. So yeah, Braves were, you know, at Braves, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, you know, and all the extensions that come out of there, Periscope. So, you know, also too, we've got our SunTrust Park accounts, which, you know, previously, you know, leading up to now have been, you know, really where we've shared a lot of the sort of chronicalization of the construction of the ballpark. And, you know, now with the 2016 season over, and we actually just moved offices the other day, so our offices are actually in SunTrust Park, you're going to see a lot more of that content, and a lot more of that content coming from the Braves channels, just because, you know, with 2016 over, we're focusing more on, you know, 2017 and the season ahead. So we've got our SunTrust Park, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So it's just, it's extremely exciting. I'll also give a plug to our Battery Atlanta. That's the name of our mixed use development at Battery ATL. Mm-hmm. That team has just been staffed up. That's a separate marketing team. So you're going to be seeing a lot of great content coming from them, leading up to the opening of SunTrust Park in the Battery of April, 2017.
And the SunTrust Park Digital and Social, does that all fall under you as well? Is there a different
yes.
team?
That's
gonna, geez.
Yep, that's us.
Lots more work to do. How about you, Greg? Where can we find you on social?
At GMize. At GMize is my Twitter.
Beautiful.
You can find me there.
That's an easy one. So if you have any trade requests for the Braves, just hit up GMize on Twitter. And thank you so much for the time today, though, Greg. I know it's never really a time to relax when you're working for a sports team. And we've learned a lot from you today, and we're definitely looking forward to seeing SunTrust Park and everything the Braves have going on next year. And I know where to follow it all.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Really appreciate your time and appreciate all you do, and look forward to talking to you later.
Hey, go Braves, except when they're playing the Padres.
Hey, actually, I'm sure you know, but if you don't, that's who we open up SunTrust Park against.
Ooh, we might put a little friendly wager on that one then.
Yeah, April 14th. All right, thanks so much, Neil.
Thanks, man.
Well, thanks again to Greg Mize, Director of Digital Marketing for the Atlanta Braves, for coming on the podcast today. Never a dull moment, never some downtime. I think right after we talked, the players of the Braves announced a new signing. So really no offseason in sports, and spring training is right around the corner. And it's going to be really exciting to see what the Braves and Greg's team does with the opening of the new SunTrust Park this coming spring. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening and downloading. You can get more episodes and other content at dsmsports.net. And follow me, your host, Neil Horwitz, on Twitter at NJH287. Until next time, we'll see you on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.